Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 286. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. As I mentioned last week, I traveled to Corvallis, Oregon recently to join the third annual Pacific Northwest Cut Flower Growers Meetup, and that's where I encountered the three guests you'll hear from today. I'm going to keep the intro short because you'll want to hear the heart of these conversations. Today's guests include Dave Dowling of Edney Flower Bulb Company and current board president of the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, and Lenny Larkin, a farmer florist and owner of B-Side Farm in Sonoma County, serving as the West and Northwest Regional Director for ASCFG. But first, please meet Elizabeth Bryant of Rose Hill Flower Farm, which is located just outside Portland. Elizabeth is a past guest of this podcast. She appeared with floral designer and friend Kyla Platt a few years ago. So look for a link to their episode in our show notes at deborahprinzing.com. Elizabeth is a person with big ideas, and beyond that, she's a big idea person who acts on those ideas. I remember when I first met her, and she reached out to me with an unsolicited offer to connect me with some people she knew at Slow Food USA. Elizabeth felt they should know about slow flowers and hear what I was doing. That led to an invitation for me to write an article for the Slow Food newsletter, allowing us to reach a huge community with the Slow Flowers message. Later, Elizabeth instigated the first Pacific Northwest Cut Flower Growers Meetup, bringing together a core team of volunteers to host the one-day session in early 2015. The vision she held is continuing on today with a dynamic cadre of fellow leaders in the Northwest region's flower farming and farmer florist world. I sat down with Elizabeth during one of our short breaks last weekend, and I asked her to share details about her new project called Growing on the Inside. It involves a flower farm and floral design workshops at Coffee Creek, Oregon's only correctional facility for women. I know you'll find it inspiring, and I hope that you feel led to show your support and even perhaps donate to the project. Let's get started. Hey, I'm really excited to introduce a past guest of this podcast, Elizabeth Bryant from Rose Hill Farm, Rose Hill Flower Farm in Portland. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Deborah.
Thanks for sitting down with me.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah, we're at the Pacific Northwest Cut Flower Growers Meetup, and we snuck out into a quiet spot because Elizabeth has some really cool news that some of you may know about, but I think the larger community, I want to share it with what you're doing. So you've had a project that you've been involved in as a volunteer in Portland for over a year, right?
Right, about 18 months.
Okay, yeah. And how did you, yeah. Tell us what it is and how did you get involved with it?
Well, it's called Blooming on the Inside, and it's a flower growing and arranging program for women that are incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, which is Oregon's only women's prison.
Wow. Yeah. Is it in the Portland area?
It is. It's just south of Portland in Wilsonville. So it's about 20 miles south of the city, but it's only about 8 miles from my farm. Mm. So a couple of years ago, I was looking for a way to use my flower growing knowledge to do some volunteer work to reach out to a community that I felt like wasn't getting access to flowers, and I realized that this prison was only a few miles from the farm, and so I got in touch with I looked up some information about their programming, and it turned out they already had a vegetable garden that had been in production since about 2009. Mm. So I contacted the coordinator for that garden program, which is also a volunteer-run program, and met with her and asked if they would be interested in adding cut flower production to what they were doing in this garden. And they were very excited about that for a couple of reasons. One was that the garden had been started as a way to get healthier food into the facility. And so they had expanded it over the years and had about a half acre in production, still do, and produced somewhere between 4,000 to 6,000 pounds of produce a year.
Wow.
That goes right into the kitchen there.
So all of the resident farmers are growing food for the commissary.
The facility.
Wow,
right,
cool.
Yeah. So there are 6 to 12, depending on the season, gardeners that are employed, that are inmates in the facility, mm-hmm. and they are on the garden crew, and they maintain and plant and harvest and do everything to keep the garden going.
Neat.
And so so this had been in place, and they were really interested in having something new to do, to focus on, to develop, because they kind of really had gotten the vegetable piece down. And they had always had beehives as well inside the facility. They have a beekeeper certification program.
How neat.
Yeah, so they had had some flowers, but really looked at flowers as bee forage and as pollinator habitat, mm-hmm. and hadn't thought about cut flowers. So anyway, they were very receptive, and she said, why don't you write a proposal of what a program might look like, what the components might be, and I'll take it to the officer in charge, and we'll see what we can do.
And this other, the food coordinator, mm-hmm. was a 100% volunteer outside position too? Or?
She was for a number of years. She was a volunteer, but then she also at some point started doing some fundraising, mm. and under the auspices of Mercy Corps Northwest, mm-hmm. which is our the nonprofit that we're sort of housed in now.
Cool.
So she had raised some grant money over the years, and so had been paid partly from grants, and then now she's also part-time employed by Department of Corrections doing behavioral health classes using the garden.
Wow.
So she's developing a therapeutic garden curriculum in the facility that uses that garden specifically.
So there's all this holistic kind of culture there already.
Yeah, there's really, I mean, they started the garden for food growing, but they've it's evolved into a therapeutic garden setting. Because they realized early on that it had a therapeutic effect
benefit.
On residents.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the therapeutic benefit was huge. People that would take gardening classes, you can get Master Gardener certification there. They have volunteers that come in and teach the Master
That's
Gardener
awesome.
Program. And so when those folks would write their evaluations, they would talk not only about, you know, learning the skills of growing food, but they would talk about what it meant for them to spend time with something that was alive and growing and starting a seed and seeing it grow and being able to nurture it, and how that really connected them to life and hope, and, you know, gave them something really meaningful in this pretty isolated experience.
Yeah.
So, so because the garden had evolved to have this more therapeutic elements, flowers really fit into that. And so she was very excited about how to use cut flowers and how to bring more flower growing into this garden. So I started, so the proposal that we came up with was to do both some floral design classes where I would take in flowers from my farm and other local farms, and I'd have a group of about 20 students, and we'd meet in the greenhouse, and we would do a seasonal arrangement, and they each would get to arrange flowers, and we'd talk about the different flowers that I would bring in, and tried to make it, you know, really like a seasonal immersion, mm-hmm. because even though they have this garden, they don't have access to other kind of seasonal markers. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they don't see the trees change colors, and they don't see all the things that would be growing in a, you know, just a regular landscape.
Or even in your neighborhood or a park,
right.
or something.
Right. So I would try to bring in, you know, all kinds of, in the fall, I would bring in all kinds of foliage with different colors on it. And, you know, in the winter, pine cones and greens and things they don't have access to. So in addition to arranging flowers, I would just lay out all of these natural elements on the table so that we could just, you know, be
immerse
with...
Immerse yourself.
Yeah, just sort of have that garden experience.
That's wonderful.
So anyway, so every time we offered this class, we'd get 150 people or so that would apply to do it. And of those, they would select about 20, because that's all we could fit space-wise. So we did 4 of those the first year. And then I also met... roughly every other week or so with the garden crew to sort of mentor them in growing their own cut flowers. So we developed some beds that were just for flowers, so that was new. and started them growing anemones and ranunculus and a lot of different cosmos and snapdragons and some things that they had not grown before.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
These were in open air raised beds. They weren't in any kind of shelter or structure.
No, this is in the central courtyard, so all the housing units and the infirmary and the classrooms all face this central courtyard. And so there are concrete paths, and then everywhere there's not a path, there was just dirt and grass. And so now that's all cultivated beds.
Wow.
Yeah, and so the response to the classes was just, it just floored me, because I thought, well, people will be appreciative, it'll be fun, it'll be just an hour of, a couple of hours of escape. But what happened was, in that 2 hours of people working with the plants and the flowers, they would tell stories about their own gardens or their grandmother's garden or some memory that, of their, they and their, partner would be coming home from work and they would stop on the roadside and pick some flowers. Everybody had a story to tell. And then at the end, we started having this tradition where the inmate photographer would come and take photographs of each woman with her arrangement, and then these group photographs. And that piece also was just, like, there was so much joy in having a photograph taken with something they'd made, which something, that expressed their creativity and that was also really beautiful and framed their face in this beautiful way.
Oh my gosh, that just sounds so poignant.
It was. I often was, in tears by the end of the flower arranging classes, because they are just, they're really moving. Hmm. And then those photographs are developed and they're posted on a wall on a contact sheet, and women can select them and have them printed, and then they can send them home.
Wow.
So then they have something beautiful. It just went so far beyond the 2 hours of the class.
That's awesome. Wow.
And then the other cool thing about that class is all the women that are in the yard doing exercise or just being outdoors, even though they're not participating in the class, they get to see what the students make.
Yeah, it's feeding them in emotionally and sensory ways as well, right?
Right.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's been really... it's just been really amazing. And the other thing that's been really interesting about it is that there are very specific constraints to what I can bring in and also what we can grow. So that has created both design challenges and horticultural challenges.
You're a good problem solver, though, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that, and constraints basically push creativity.
Right.
That's what happens. And so we can't grow anything that's over 3 feet. We can't use any flowers or plants that have any poisonous parts at all.
Mm-hmm.
We can't use things that grow thickly that would, create a vision obstruction or a disruption in a line of sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of vetting that goes on of all the plants that I bring in, but also, we get creative with what we do have to work with. So,
what about tools? I mean, are you using cutting tools? And
so there are two facilities. There's a minimum facility and a medium facility. And so minimum are women that are there for less than 4 years left on their term. And the security is a little less rigid than it is in the medium facility. So the garden crew is allowed to have tools, a very specific set of tools that are kept in a, locked tool cage. But they have clippers, they have shovels, they have rakes, and they have access to them during their work hours.
Sure.
And so we are able to share those tools in classes. So not everybody gets a pair of clippers, but we have about enough that every couple of women can share a pair of clippers.
While they're designing.
Yes,
yeah,
while they're designing.
That's cool. And what about vessels? Are you bringing that in from donations? Or?
Right. So, so supplying the classes has been a challenge. People have been very generous with flowers. And then the vessels, the captain, she's not actually not in charge of this unit anymore, but the captain was there when I started, was really, really interested in using things that were recyclable or had some other use in the facility, so we weren't purchasing new material.
Mm-hmm.
She saw that as part of a sort of a sustainability mindset inside the facility. So she wanted us to use those big yogurt containers, because they had those on hand. So the first few classes where we used those, we figured out ways to decorate them as part of the class. So one time I brought in strips of fabric and we glued fabric on them. Sure. Another time I brought in those paper mache pots, mm-hmm. and we painted them, mm-hmm. and so things either need to be compostable or recyclable. They can't have metal or glass, so that's another kind of creative sure. constraint, but it works.
Well, you just embraced it. I mean, like, you know, none of us want to use a yogurt container, but
right.
you made it work.
Yes, but, you know, we can't use chicken wire. Yogurt containers want to tip over, and, you know, so just figuring out how to weight things. We developed this whole system of setting one inside another with some gravel in the bottom, and sure. just a lot of things that you wouldn't think about because you have access to, you know, whatever you want to use. Hmm. They do have tools. The new garden we just put in the medium facility, we're just getting around to buying tools, and they will have a similar system where they're locked up in a cage, but when the crew is on the job, they can use the tools. So
that answers a big question that I just had been wondering about. The 2017, is this your second season or your third season working with the flower growing and floral design?
Yeah, so this is my second year
okay.
working with them. So, but that includes two summers of growing
okay.
with them. Yeah.
So you're kind of going into a new phase, I understand, with sort of new goals.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to, you know, have you share, because I got excited when I saw what you were doing.
Yeah. So the first year was sort of a pilot project, mm-hmm. basically, to see how, you know, if we could logistically pull it off, if we could, you know, everything you do inside Department of Corrections is a trial, because, you know, they sort of see that, you know, everything could potentially be a security risk. So you sort of have to prove yourself if you bring in a new project
sure.
that, you know, it's going to work, it's not going to create problems, people are going to respond well. And we proved that. And so then we're kind of moving into the next stage now, which is growing the program. And that has meant we were, not just me specifically, but the garden project as a whole was invited to plant for the very first time a garden on the medium facility side. So those are women that are incarcerated for sometimes life sentences, but definitely long-term sentences,
wow.
longer than 4 years.
Yeah.
And there were no gardens over there whatsoever. So none of the yards had any gardens. And so for the very first time this fall, we were invited to design and install a perennial garden that will be maintained by inmates on that side.
Wow.
So there's great potential, because part of that project is also doing some staff gardens, because staff morale and support of staff is another goal of bringing the flowers in.
Mm.
And so there's a staff garden that will be part of that, and then potentially down the road, you know, the potential is there to have a garden in every residential unit yard.
Wow.
There's great demand for classes, and I've been doing classes now on the medium facility side in the behavioral mental health unit, where we do flower arranging with a little bit smaller group, about 12 students. But, you know, there people have responded really, really well. So they are very open to it, and there's definitely potential for growth. So with potential for growth comes the need for support. So we did sort of launch our first kind of online fundraiser this month. And so it's through Mercy Corps Northwest, which, as I said, is our sort of fiscal sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And
so these are tax-deductible donations.
It's a tax-deductible okay. donation, and you can link to it right from mercycorpsnorthwest.org. If you go to their website, you'll see the prison garden is one of the links, and the fundraiser is linked there. And I'll be sure and put it on my website, too.
Okay, and we'll put them in the show notes.
In the show notes,
yeah.
Great. Yeah, so it's through them, and it's through a platform called GiveGab, which works very similar to, like, Indiegogo or something, but it's... there's a little video there. You can see some photographs of the garden and the gardeners, and you can give a donation. And people have been so generous. I'm so touched by the flower grower community.
That's
because
neat.
a lot of farmers and florists that I know have been supporting the project. So it's really heartwarming.
Is it the program? I can't remember specifically what you're trying to raise money for, but you itemize some of the things that
Some of the things, right. So some of the things we're trying to raise money for are just some of the materials for the classes and for the garden. Mm-hmm. So that includes seeds, bulbs, tools, plants. And because especially we're growing the program, we're buying some of those things in greater quantities. We have new gardens we're trying to get up and running.
Trying to get your startups materials that roll out.
Right. Wow. And then, because the gardeners start all their own seeds and they haven't grown a lot of bulbs in the past. So that's something we kind of went big into this year. And so partly it's for supplies. And then we're also hoping, one of our goals is to document the program and develop some curricular material that could be, so some of these things could be replicated in other facilities.
Wow.
And some things that are, more kind of specifically geared toward behavioral health care providers in facilities, how they can use flowers and flower growing as part of their therapeutic, processes.
Sure.
And so, anytime you're developing curriculum and programs, there's some staffing there that needs funding. We have some other grants that we're looking at, and we have some really generous sponsors that have provided a lot of plant material in the last couple of years, specifically Blooming Nursery, which is just outside of Portland.
It's an Oregon nursery.
It's an Oregon wholesale nursery, and then also Al's Garden Center has been really, really generous. Those two companies provided almost all of the plants for the new medium facility garden.
Wow.
So people have been very generous with donations and of flowers and plants, and to keep the project rolling, we're looking to just supplement that what we're getting through in-kind donations. Yeah.
And you're trying to raise like $7,500, is that it? And you said you're already over a third raised.
We're about a third of the way funded.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And there's at least another month to go.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, you'll be happy with the $10 donation. That's gonna help, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing. It's like the butterfly effect. It's like, it seems like not that much money. You think, well, how is that gonna help? But every single packet of seeds, it just has so much impact.
Yeah.
And whenever I give a class there, they just thank me, and the coordinator will just be like, oh, this is so much, you're just doing so, you're giving a lot of time here. And I say, well, it's for me, it's a small chunk of time that has like such a big effect. And I think that's what, small donations, large donations, it all just
adds
has
up.
Amazing ripple effect. Yeah.
I'm so excited and enthusiastic about this project of yours and your vision, because I think anyone who works with flowers already knows how fulfilling it is and how meaningful it is.
Mm-hmm.
But providing this, experience to a population that doesn't really have access is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And it feeds you as much as
absolutely
the students are being fed.
Yeah.
And you're creating a model that can be taken nationwide. And I think the prison system is probably not great in every state. And to have some shining example of, not only are you helping people where they live, but they're, especially for people who know they're going to leave the incarceration, they have a skill set that could carry them into a different life when they leave, right?
They do. And, I've had more than one gardener at this point leave, on the verge of parole and saying, I'm going to figure out how to be a flower farmer. They leave
special.
Very, very excited. And whether they become a flower farmer or not, they have a set of horticultural skills that they're going to use somehow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth, will you come back and tell me, we'll get you on again when you get your curriculum ready. I mean, I think there'll be people who would love to try to emulate this in their own communities. And, I mean, this could be a whole new life for you.
Yes. Well, it feels that way sometimes.
But for now, you're in your own community, and that's really meaningful.
It is. It really is. And I think, right now, this is a time where people are talking a lot about prison reform, and that definitely needs to happen. And at the same time, people are in prison right now, every day.
Right.
And we need to reform the system. But those people, I was just talking to Diane Sukhavati, and she said, people are not disposable, and beauty is the greatest healer. And I think those two things are what this project is about, really.
Yeah. I love it. Well, it looks like there's a break, so it's a perfect timing. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Deborah.
I'm so glad I got to see you. And
thanks.
I know the Slow Flowers listeners are going to want to get involved. And if you're able, please consider making a donation. Just know that you're planting a seed for the future for so many women who will thrive when they get a chance to grow and design with flowers. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you're moved to share your resources to support Growing on the Insides campaign. Money isn't the only way to help this project. You can follow the link to the funding page at our show notes at deborahprinzing.com and just click on the Facebook logo to post this to your own Facebook page. That'll make sure more people learn about the opportunity. And as Elizabeth says, even a $5 donation makes a big difference. Okay, next up, Dave Dowling and Lenny Larkin. Dave Dowling owned a successful cut flower farm in Maryland for several years. He placed great emphasis on introducing young people to horticulture through employment on his farm, through bringing them to the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers conferences, and by mentoring them as they moved into their own cut flower businesses. Dave is responsible for the success of many new growers across the country. His generosity and enthusiasm for sharing are unparalleled, and annually ASCFG awards the Dave Dowling Scholarship, open to all undergraduate or graduate students working toward a 2 or 4 year degree or a graduate degree in horticulture or floriculture. Today, Dave juggles president duties with his day job as sales representative and warehouse manager for Edney Flower Bulb, based in Freedon, New Jersey. Lenny Larkin started B-Side Farm after falling head over heels for flowers. A Boston native who migrated to Sonoma County, Lenny was seduced by the region's wine, apples, and coastline. In addition to her flower farming and floral design endeavors and her leadership role with ASCFG, Lenny is an adjunct instructor of horticulture at Santa Rosa Junior College. In the off-season, she travels the country to organize and present at conferences for the cut flower industry. She's passionate about local flowers and loves to mentor new growers. Lenny is an active member of the North Bay Flower Collective and can be found, often found, dancing in the field. Lenny is a past guest of this podcast. I had her on with Bethany Coughlin of Clarice, a florist with whom she often works, a couple years ago. So I'll have a link to that interview if you're interested in following their story. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I am delighted to introduce two amazing guests, both who are active leaders in the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, Dave Dowling. Hi, Dave.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm great. And Lenny Larkin. Hi, Lenny.
Hi, Deborah. Hi,
Do you
Dave.
Have to have like one of those like alliterative names to be?
Yeah. We should take it on the road, actually. I don't know what we
the
do.
The DD and the LL. We're in Corvallis, Oregon, and this weekend has been halfway gone. The Oregon State University Small Farms Conference took place today, and Lenny was one of the presenters. I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about that. And then tomorrow is a Pacific Northwest Cut Flower Growers Meetup, and Dave is speaking, and I'm
Correct.
Speaking. And then Monday and Tuesday is the regional ASCFG meeting, and you're probably both speaking or you're running the show.
I
want to hear
and
about
speaking
it.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, so I wanted to take this opportunity to grab you. And Dave, I just said, I'm going to ask you about being president of ASCFG. You've only done it for a year. And you told me you've been president in the past.
Yes.
I guess I didn't know that. So that was, tell us a little bit about how you got here.
Okay. Back in 2002 or 2001, I met Bob Wallum. He told me about the ASCFG and got me to join.
Wait, were you already growing flowers?
I was already growing flowers. I've been growing for 4 or 5 years. Didn't know what I was doing yet. So,
but kind of in the D.C. area.
In the D.C. area.
Wait, there was a time where you didn't know what you were doing.
I could
this
tell,
is news.
I could tell stories, but I won't.
All right, we got it on record, though.
But I joined the ASCFG, and then like 2 years later, Bob's term was up as regional director. So he said, Dave, you should run for regional director. So I said, okay, and I ran, and I won. So I was regional director, Mid-Atlantic regional director for 3 years. And I took a year off and was the conference chair for the conference that was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, back in 2005.
Okay, that's before I got involved. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Wow.
And then after that, I ran for president. I was president. Back then, president was a two-year term. Mm-hmm. So I was president for 2 years, ran again, was president again for 2 years, and then it was somebody else's turn.
Wow, so you had like 2 years on, 2 years off, 2 years on. Like you were what, a sucker for killer?
Punishment,
yes. Yeah, wow.
But it's always good punishment. It was good.
But there was something that kept you engaged in this organization. Was it the people? Was it the kind of the self-enrichment? Was it the ideas? And all of the above?
All of the above. It's learning. You learn so much from going to a conference or visiting another farmer's farm. Being on the board, you get to travel around and go to the conferences, go to the people's other members' farms.
See all the regions, right?
Yeah, all the regions. Because their board meetings will usually have them in conjunction with another meeting. So it's either the national conference or regional meeting. So you'll get together with the board and usually will sometimes be one of the board members' farmers nearby. So we go to see their farm. And you learn so much from seeing a farm. You can't beat it.
So what was the name of your farm?
Farmhouse Flowers and Plants.
And how long did you have it, Dave?
20 years.
Wow. And it was in the D.C. area?
20 miles north of D.C., okay. So I sold in the D.C. area where it's good marketing around there.
Yeah. Was it for Maryland or Virginia?
I was in Maryland.
Okay. You are legendary. I mean, I know that at one point when I first met you, you were the auctioneer
That's playtime. Yes. I was the auctioneer at the conference.
At ASCOG. I did really a bad thing once. I don't know if you still hate me for it. When we had the auction in Seattle at after the Tacoma conference, actually we were up in Mount Vernon, and I came and like took something from you, like a peony root. I'm like, oh, well, I just
I don't remember.
Oh, good, I'm so bad.
I don't hold it against you because I don't remember.
Oh, good. You looked at me like, who are you? No, there's a big backstory there. We'll talk about that another time. Your farm is now in the rearview mirror. You
yes.
have a different career, right?
Right.
And tell us about your career.
Now I work for Edney Flowerbulb, which is now a division of Fred C. Glockner Company.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't when you first started?
No, it was just a family business that was owned by the Dembrisian family who had Edney Flowerbulb. And then they merged or were acquired by Glockner last fall.
And Edney was one of your suppliers?
They were suppliers. I used to buy from them. And I was doing part-time sales for them when I was still growing. Because they needed a salesperson, so he asked me to do it, and I said, sure. So I was basically selling to people that I knew, other ASCFG members.
Well, it seems like you would be this knowledgeable salesperson because you knew the product,
I knew the product, and now that I'm working there full-time, I know the cut flower product more than anybody else there.
And everybody wants to talk to you about what to grow, right?
Yes. I get lots of questions about how to grow things and what to grow, and
wow.
I'm happy to help people do it right and not make the mistakes.
So, Dave, how do you juggle doing that full-time, very demanding full-time? And do you have just a territory or do you have the whole country?
I'm the whole country.
Oh, my God.
And anybody who calls Edney that wants to talk about cut flower bulbs, I'm the person.
And what are you, is it mainly lilies or what are the
lilies
varieties?
Are the main thing, but lilies, tulips, daffodils, hyacinths. We sell peonies, so lots of stuff.
Wow.
And it seems like you'll give the same amount of attention to the small guys that you would to the big growers, which really stands apart, I think, in your world.
Well, I figured that small grower may someday be a big grower.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get to be a big grower unless they do it right. And
well,
I want to make sure they're trying to do it right.
Thank you for bringing that up. I mean, that's your character of just being an educator and a helper. And I've just heard for years from people who have a Dave Dowling story of learning something from you.
I've heard my name several times on the podcast before. It's always been good.
So you were all of a sudden, because of a change on the board, you became president again.
Yes.
It wasn't like you necessarily asked for this, but it happened.
Right.
That was about a year ago.
It's been a year, yes.
And can you just talk a little bit about the state of the industry and what's happening with ASCFG? I feel like there's been a big spike in membership in like the last 5 years.
Yeah, membership in the past 5 or 6 years has basically doubled. We've gone from was 500 to 600 people. Now we're over 1,100 members. And
that's amazing.
Members from all over the country. And it's not like we have a big spike because there was a meeting in Grand Rapids and all of a sudden we have 100 new members in that area. It's just all across the country from Florida to California to every state, except for I think we still don't have anyone in North Dakota.
Hello, I have no Slow Flowers members in North Dakota. Let's go there and find them.
Yeah. Does North Dakota really exist?
So I think I have some suspicions as to what you would attribute that to, mm-hmm. but I love hearing that it's pretty much across the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not specifically one obvious region like North Bay where Lenny is.
Right. Right.
So what are some of the influences that you can point to?
I think a big thing is just that there is the internet, which there wasn't. When I started growing flowers, you went to the library and found a book. There was no Google.
Yeah.
You were getting plant lists off of faxes maybe, right?
And, well, you would fax things to the florist if you were selling things. Or literally to buy a book. I remember the first time I bought the specialty cut flower book, Alan Armitage's book, I had to go to drive into D.C. to the Borders books and have them order it for me. Because there was no Amazon. Mm-hmm. You didn't have that.
Mm-hmm. So just access.
The access there is now. You can learn so much off the internet, and then you get the social groups, like the Facebook groups. ASCFG has their own Facebook group. There's another Cut Flower Facebook group. And the interaction with there, it's like you get the testimonials from members who say, you need to join the ASCFG, you'll learn about it. And it's amazing.
Did you start the Flower Farmer group on Facebook?
That Flower Farmer group on Facebook, someone else started, I can't remember who, and they assigned or appointed me and like four other people to be moderators, and I never got asked. I was just say, here, you can be a moderator, and here I am.
Are you kind of like the main dude?
No, there's like four or five other people, but I'm one of the most active moderators.
It's back to your personal commitment to the industry.
Right.
You just
and
feel like you have to share.
To help people not make the same mistakes that someone else made earlier.
Mm-hmm. So technology has really boosted interest in flower farming, mm-hmm. and do you feel that ASTFG kind of has... I sense that there's two demographics. There's the newbies who are interested in dipping their toe in the water and exploring just the basics of flower farming. And then there's veterans like you who have had a career, have had farms, and who have different issues. I mean, how does an organization serve both demographics?
It can be tricky because we get the, I don't want to call them older members, but the more established members who have different needs. They know how to grow a sunflower. They know how to grow lisianthus. They're looking more as help with marketing, help with employment issues, employee issues, that kind of stuff.
Because there's probably larger businesses.
Larger businesses where they might have five or six employees, where mm-hmm. someone else who's a newer grower is just the husband or wife or just the wife or just one person. They don't have the issues with employees.
Mm-hmm.
Very different. So that's why when we have a conference, we have to be careful and try and have subject matter that covers all the bases.
It's hard. It's hard to be all things to all people, too.
Yes.
So you have to go back to your mission, and the mission is to foster the success of domestic flowers, right?
Right, which our slogan somewhere it's written that we grow growers, and to grow flower growers to be better growers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a good grower, you grow a good product, your product can sell and be successful.
What are some of the things that you're excited about this year? I mean, is this the first regional meeting of the year, and there's two more?
This is the first meeting of the year here in Portland.
Okay.
Then we'll have one in August in Canada at Green Park Nursery, and then there's one in October 9th at Sunny Meadows Farms in Ohio with Stephen Gretel Adams, who we've had before in the podcast.
I actually read your president's letter in the Cut Flower Quarterly last week, and you talked about the year of the O's.
The O's, yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Or Oregon, Ohio, and Ontario, yes.
Yeah, and then generally now you're in a cycle of the even years are the large national conferences, and then the odd years have the more sort of growers, school-oriented regional conferences?
Right. Well, we do the big, huge conference that we had last year in Grand Rapids. Next year it will be in Raleigh.
Right.
We do that every other year,
and
it's usually a 3 or 4 day, much bigger.
Extended.
Always a full-day grower school and 2 days worth of sessions and tours. Mm-hmm. And then in the off years, we have 3 or 4 other meetings scattered around the country.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really call them regional meetings because we don't want people to feel like if that's not in your region, you can't go to it. It's open to anybody to go to.
Well, that's a really good point because there are people from other parts of the U.S. who are coming into town for the Portland meeting, and that surprised me.
Because it's a sexy lineup.
All right.
It is a really good lineup. But we've got people coming in from all over the country.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump over to Lenny for a second.
Okay, sure.
She's just used the word sexy, so she wants me to... And that means you can eat a little bit of your cheesecake.
Okay.
That was our code word.
Lenny, we had you on the podcast a couple years ago with Bethany, and we were at a regional meeting in San Jose, right?
Yes, I think we were.
That was an ASCFG event when I first met you, and you were really the two of you, you and Bethany from Clarice, were kind of pioneers in starting the North Bay Flower Collective, and that was I thought that was really progressive, and now others have modeled that.
Yeah.
So bring us up to speed on what's happened to you. All of a sudden, now you're an elected officer of ASCFG.
Right? Hey. Yeah, that was great. And it's funny. It's fun thinking back on being on your podcast a few years ago, Scott, because I feel like so much has changed in a few years for me and in the industry and in the ASCFG.
You spoke at that conference.
That
was the very first time, right?
I did. I kind of gave a presentation on how to be a first-year flower farmer, how to be a smart first-year flower farmer. Because like Dave was saying, I think my kind of generation of growers, and that can span a wide range of ages, but being kind of a newer grower, you know, this is my 7th year farming, but not so many years growing flowers. I think we have the benefit of people like Dave who have been doing it for a long time and who are sharing that information. So not only having that kind of next generation, but also having the resources, the internet, and all the Facebook
and
groups.
And this depth of what, as Diane Sukavati of Jellamole Farm says, the heirloom body of knowledge that you're passing forward.
Definitely.
And Dave definitely exemplifies that.
Yes.
And now you're doing that.
I'm trying, yeah. So I have Beeside Farm and Floral Design in Sebastopol, which is in Sonoma County, California. And I started it just a few years ago after...
Wait, you said you've been farming for 7 years, but how long
have you
been on flowers?
7 years. Flowers, like...
Four?
Three or four. Okay. Yeah. This season will be my second season doing flowers as my business full-time.
Okay.
So I used to run Petaluma Bounty, which was a nonprofit educational farm, after doing the Farm and Garden program with Christoph and everyone else for 2 years down in Santa Cruz. So I have the story that everyone else has. You grew vegetables and you fell in love with flowers. But, you know, I moved into farming after having kind of a mini career in adult education and kind of mentorship and refugee resettlement and social work. And so basically it all revolves around education. Mm-hmm. So when I moved into farming, I was looking at it through a lens of education. I went to the UCSC program thinking, how can I learn these skills, be outside for a career, learn to grow things, and look forward to how I'm going to teach these things to other people. So after when I fell in love with flowers a few years later and left the educational farm I was running, I dove into the world of weddings and growing kind of high-end flowers for designers and really launching my wedding business, which is now the core of my business. But right now I'm already pretty quickly coming back around to saying, okay, how can I share what I'm learning almost in real time as I'm learning it with my generation of growers and those even newer to it than me. And
because people are so hungry for that information,
they're so hungry
right?
for it, and we do not have to go through all the same, I was going to say mistakes, but they're not mistakes. We don't have to learn the hard way. Like, we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. I think there's so much to be learned through experimentation and trial and error, and there's only so much you can learn from asking more seasoned growers or reading their books.
Yeah.
But
in other words, you still have to do it.
You still have to do the work.
You can't just ask someone to pick their brain.
Totally. You have to try it. Not only do you need to get to know your land and your climate, but you need to go through the process of having certain failures in order to figure out how to do it differently next time.
So what do you have? Where are you growing Beeside? Are you in Petaluma right now?
I mean, I moved to Sebastopol.
Oh, that's
right. Thank you for remembering that. It's not far from Petaluma. So I took on too much this past year. I took on too much land. I was going to be a farmer. Dave's laughing because this, I think, is a classic story.
Hungry. Her eyes were bigger than her stomach.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, a lot of these mistakes, we have to go through them in order to learn them. And so I think, side note real quick, I'm figuring out what things we can all avoid, what mistakes we can avoid, and then what maybe we do need to go through. So I'm really focusing lately on the business end of things and helping people look at their margins and look at their bottom line. And those are things
cost of goods sold and
exactly,
that sort of thing,
and different tiers of who you're selling to and what percentage of your flowers are going towards wholesale versus going to your end consumer, and how does your market
where you are? How does that dictate what you should do? So I think those are things that we can study and learn and be smart about from the get-go, and we have the benefit of other people's experience. But the growing, I think that's more where we still have to do the trial and error. But so my little farm, Beside, yeah, I took on too much last year, took on too much acreage, didn't have the right machinery. I had the right markets and the right kind of customer base and demand for my flowers and relationships I had built. But it was just silly. And I, you know, I'm in California, like kind of surrounded by bigger flower farms that can grow the same flowers for a lot cheaper. Their cost of production is just way lower. They're super efficient.
Like in certain categories or?
In certain categories, almost across the board too. You know, there's certainly more kind of high-end kind of specialty things that I could grow and sell on more of a wholesale level, but it just, in a bigger way, it seemed to not make sense. And at the same time, I'm in the middle of a huge wedding market. And as I started working for florists and doing a few weddings here and there and realizing that I really like that work, I love the design work, I can get paid doing the design work and maybe foresee a future for myself where I can support myself doing something I love rather and not work 80 hours a week, because I know I don't need to do that. I'm kind of over the street cred of like working myself to the bone. I am. It's
not cool. You have nothing to prove anymore.
Yeah, and people don't get it yet. Like, I hate seeing people burn themselves out and then either leave farming altogether or just be down about it. So I'm trying to be smart about it, and I'm trying to encourage other people to be also. But so, you know, this made me look at my market and say, I need to do more weddings, and I need to grow fewer flowers. So this coming year, I'm growing flowers mostly from my own design work. I'm keeping just a third of an acre, which is essentially a garden. I mean, I pack a lot in, so it's not any old garden.
You're what's that term? High density farming or something like that?
Definitely. And so growing from my own work and then selling through the Sonoma Flower Mart, which is something that came out of the Nicole from California Sister and the North Bay Flower Collective, which, like you said, Bethany and I were really involved with, and with Hedda from Full Bloom, who really started it. And so I'll be selling extra flowers through those avenues, but pretty much doing weddings where I can seed the flowers, grow the flowers, cut them and arrange them. But I'm also trying to leave a little bit of space in my life and in my business for this kind of education component and for continuing to be a learner, to teach others, to write about it, both on my blog, which I'm finally like trying to do more regularly because I think I have a lot of information that I'm learning and I want to share.
Yeah, and Cut Flower Quarterly wants you to write something every quarter.
Totally.
Right?
So there you go. So, yeah.
You know, and can I just stop? Yeah. I really want to compliment you, because when I came up to North Bay a year ago this time, that's when you kind of on your own just had this event with Nicolette and Sarah from the Little Flower School of Brooklyn, and you just kind of, you created some kind of standalone event that you invited all your peers to, and it was really well attended.
That was
in
fun.
Fact, people came up from San Francisco for
they
that.
They did, yeah. I decided I wanted to start doing workshops on my farm, which was kind of a natural thing for me to do with kind of my background and my ability to babble.
Make it happen.
Yeah, and so I invited Sarah from Saipua and Nicolette Owen, and they were in town doing another workshop, and so we kind of invited all the farmers and the florists to come talk about, and you were there, which was amazing.
That
to
was
talk
really
about,
fun.
Talk about growing kind of high-end flowers for designers, and so that kind of kicked off my workshop series for the year, and then I've had different guests, you know, my buddy Stephanie from the Little Petunia come up and teach a class, and just I'm teaching more and more this year, everything from people who want to just come out and play with flowers to more kind of DIY wedding classes and gardening classes. But I really love doing that kind of thing, and I love writing about these skills and kind of the business end of farming, so I'm trying to find a way to formally incorporate that into my business rather than it be something that I leave to
as
the
an
side.
Afterthought.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of value added in a way.
Yeah, and I want to just bounce over to Dave for a second and just ask you to kind of riff on this idea that when you started, that people like Lenny weren't really active in ASCFG, the sort of the farmer florist, the young floral entrepreneur who wanted to grow and design. I mean, that's sort of a latter day event, right?
Or, right. I think the term the farmer florist is the past 4 or 5 years, so to speak. I mean, there's some that have been doing it, but for the most part, we have some members now that are full-time designers and full-time farmers. I don't know how they do both, but they do. Some
so
of them quite a lot.
You think that's kind of a new phenomenon?
I would think new. I mean, years ago, florists grew their own stuff, and it was a different world back then.
Absolutely.
They didn't ship stuff around. But I would say in the past 5 or 6 years is when the term farmer florist came out, and they're really out there doing it and doing really well.
Well, what I really noticed was in 2014 when the ASCFG conference was in Wilmington, Delaware, and Jenny Love and Ellen Frost and a few of their cohorts basically produced one entire track.
There was an entire half floral, the day was floral, all about the wedding business, and floral design.
And I feel like that was a turning point where it acknowledged that this is relevant information for farmers.
And it's something that our members needed to know and were looking to learn.
Yeah, and have you ever done design yourself, Dave?
I did used to do weddings years ago.
Ooh.
But I stopped because the farmers markets made more money. Because I never charged enough for the weddings.
Yeah.
And there were too many times I was up till midnight doing the wedding, and the market had to get up at 6 for the market and go in from the market to deliver the wedding. It's just, I like the farmers markets
better. Okay, so you needed to take Lenny's workshop today.
Yes.
Yeah.
too many brides I should say the worst one. She was in her mid-30s, been planning that wedding for 20 years. She was so picky. It was a nightmare.
Say that for your memoir.
Yeah.
You might have to change the name, though.
Yeah.
Lenny, I didn't get to hear your presentation today for the Oregon Small Farms Conference, but can you just kind of quickly summarize it?
And
because I think that, was it recorded?
I don't think so.
Oh, bummer. Well, now people need to hire you to come speak to their local group.
Definitely. Love to do that. Yeah, and another side note, you know, I went and got some mentorship from Jenny Love this fall, who I love, and she's a great friend, and she's a board, and she's been kind of a mentor to me without knowing it from afar. So I went and kind of asked her. I got some consulting work from her, and because she really did pave the path for me and a lot of people like me. So I enjoy doing that and then also turning it around and trying to help newer growers with the skills I've learned. Forget how that related
So tell me what you talked
about today. Yeah.
What was the name of the talk?
It was called kind of how to dive in as a farmer florist.
Okay.
Something
and
like that.
And this is for people who maybe aren't even growing flowers yet. They're other types of small
flowers. You know what? There were two flower tracks today, and Erin from Raindrop Farm really put on the flower track at the Oregon Small Farms Conference. She's amazing. She's also putting me up all week, which is great. But she put on two flower tracks today. One was the bigger one, and that was in the morning, and it was a panel of three different farms speaking to farmers who wanted to incorporate flowers into their farm. So mostly vegetable growers who grew a few flowers and maybe wanted to grow more.
So it's more about diversification.
Yes.
Okay.
And so then mine was supposed to be a little bit more geared towards a smaller audience of people who probably do grow flowers already but want to start to do design work.
Which is so cool. It's like people are pursuing, okay, now I've added flowers, great. Now what can I do with them next?
Totally.
I can design, which is another value added play, right?
Yeah. So I tried to talk about the pros and cons of adding design work into your system or your plan, saying that it's not all like, I think farmers have a tendency to think florists are just rolling in the money and just like wearing cute shoes.
It's
and
kind of like people think garden writers are
totally, right? Yeah, I'm sure. Totally. So, you know,
they have cute shoes.
So yeah, you see this, there's this thing about like florists taking pictures, like point of view pictures of the floor and them holding a, so in the foreground it's them holding a bouquet, then their cute shoes, and it's like, how are they working that hard if they're wearing those shoes?
I love it.
But I'm learning that they probably just change their shoes, because it's
as
hard
an aside,
work.
You might have already met Kathleen Barber from Erica's Fresh Flowers. We had a big meeting last month with the Pacific Northwest Cut Flower Growers Group, and she was on Skype. Everybody else was in the room. And they were talking about, oh, our nails are dirty. And she holds up this, like, perfectly manicured hand. And I was like, how can you be a flower farmer? She goes, well, I do a trade with one of my clients.
Nice. See, yeah, they're smart. You can be kind of like, you can take care of yourself and work hard. You just have to be smart about it.
Look at her nails tomorrow.
I will. I'm going to check them out. So, yeah, my talk was really telling people what I've learned in how to incorporate design into your plan and really taking a hard look at how much time it takes. So I went through the week in the life of doing a wedding, and then I looked at finances. I broke down how much a wedding might cost, how much my gross income from a wedding might be, where that goes, how much of that I hope to be profit, how much is expenses. There's a lot of numbers, labor, all of that, and then kind of yeah, we talked about workshops and some different value-added components, too. So I was basically trying to show people that it's a different enterprise than being a farmer. It's tricky to bring it along. You can make money at it, but you have to be smart about it. And that, I kind of praised design as a different income stream and a different way to use mm-hmm. different parts of your, different creative
abilities. It's like a right brain, left brain thing.
Totally.
Do you think that you'll blog about that on your website? Because I want people to be able to come find your advice when you have in your spare time.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to. And I'm doing a lot of writing this winter, and I hope to extend that into the next season.
Right. So we'll have a link to your website so that people can find you and subscribe.
Yeah.
And now, tomorrow we're going to have a great day with a meetup. And Dave, what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk tomorrow about extending the season in the spring and the fall to make money more months out of the year.
Number one question, right?
Yeah. And then also about scheduling flowers for the holidays. So if you want to have flowers ready for Mother's Day, when do you plant them? If you want flowers for Thanksgiving, when do you plant those?
Wow. Nice. So you're really looking at almost the 12-month cycle of the calendar, right? All but
yes.
Maybe, like, people are planting.
I used to go year-round and sell year-round, and that's what I think everyone should try and do.
When you were doing that, what zone were you in?
I was zone 7B.
Okay.
So it was cold.
So
we had snow.
Seriously possible in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah,
and
yes,
in the
definitely.
Bay Area.
Here, yes. You just have to have like I was talking earlier to Tony Getz, you have to have a heated structure if you're going to have flowers blooming in January and February.
Mm-hmm. So your idea is just to say, look, there's tons of flowers in the summer, but the opportunity in early spring, late winter, early spring, and then after the frost
after
into
the frost,
fall,
right. Mm-hmm.
That's where there's more demand than supply, and that's where people have maybe a sweet spot that they could take an opportunity for.
Correct, and even if just in the fall, you can extend your season 3 or 4 weeks. That's 3 or 4 weeks worth of income, and if you're selling $2,000 a week, that adds up to $6,000 or $8,000 extra
that
income.
Pays
that
your
year.
Mortgage for a couple
it makes
months.
A big difference.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's same thing if you have a late frost 1 year, all of a sudden you made an extra $2,000 or $3,000 because the frost is 3 weeks late.
So do you feel like this this information is pretty applicable to most regions? Like just depending on when your frost time is?
Any information from any region is usually applicable to another region within a within reason.
You just take
Florida is very different than Alaska, but whatever you learn in this regional, you can make it apply to your region.
And you just say, okay, when's my first frost? When's my last frost?
Right.
Wow, that's cool. And you've written about this and spoken about this extensively. You don't have a website right now, do you?
I don't have a website, no.
Okay. So this is going to be another reason to bring Dave in, but you're wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah, I do, yes.
Okay. When
all kinds of stuff.
When is your presidency of ASCFG wrapping up?
2018 will be my last year.
Okay. So you've got
two more years to go.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. So. But you're having fun.
I'm having fun. I love it. Yes. It's good. And
when
I encourage everyone else to try it.
Lenny's your she's your mentor.
She's
I'm still the newbie on the board.
Yeah, he's got big plans for you, though.
Yeah, right.
Have you been asked to do a book, Dave?
All the time.
Ooh. Do you have any desire to?
A little bit, but it's a big time commitment,
yes,
I would think.
Yes, it is. It's a labor of love.
Yes.
It's
in the back of my head.
It's a way to create a... Amy Stewart once said to me, it's a affordable marketing brochure.
Yeah.
It's like...
I have people suggest, when is Dave going to write his book? And it's always not this week.
What would it be, Dave? What would it be about? Just your
flowers.
Personal story?
Cut flowers, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just you're just... In general.
Passionate about it.
Yeah.
And Lenny probably has a book in her.
Call me when you need help with your book.
Okay.
I'm learning that I'm good at telling other people's stories or getting information out of them to share with other people, like you. I'm trying to be you. Not really.
Well, come on board. You can be my correspondent.
Yeah,
before we wrap up, Lenny, you talked about the ASCFG regional meeting as being sexy,
yes.
And we didn't say why it's sexy.
All right.
So give us the sexy pitch.
Yeah, so it's this Monday, and we'll have all the... information available on the ASCFG website later on for members, and hopefully videos too, and I'll probably blog about it too.
So after the fact, people can conference. If they're members, they can get that information.
Okay. Definitely. Sure. So if you're hearing this podcast, you can head on over and find some information about it and hear some talks. But basically, we decided to gear this a bit more towards experienced growers, not necessarily people with 20 years of experience, but people who wanted to learn a little bit more about specialty crops.
Like go to the next level.
Go to the next level. Yeah. So we're calling it deep dives. And we tried to really... This has been a little bit of a labor of love on my part for the past few months, as I'm sure many conferences in the past have been for other ASCFG board members, because we just wanted to make it great, and I really personally was on a mission to reach out to people who are not necessarily new growers, but new speakers, people who don't see themselves as a leader in the field, but they really are, or they would be if people only knew what they were doing.
They had information to share.
Exactly.
Thumbs up on that.
Yeah, and you and I have chatted about this, and we've talked about kind of way to get new people to tell their stories, which is what you're all about, and it's amazing. And so we reached out to some growers and designers who aren't necessarily that connected with the ASCFG. So it was a lot of kind of education and saying, this is who our membership is, this is what they might want to hear. So I've done a lot of back and forth with a lot of these speakers, except for Dave and then Ray Gray, who are
they're the pros.
Yeah, but
have
found
great to have them.
It's amazing. Indispensable. So we have Fallon Shea from Garden Valley Ranch coming to talk about her roses.
So bummed that I'll miss her talk.
It's
going to be fabulous.
She's great, and everyone can't wait to hear. I know I heard that people are coming from across the country to hear her speak about her roses.
And Fallon's going to talk about garden roses. Growing them for cut.
Growing them for cut.
Sustainable way, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's going to be killer.
It's
I wish I could be there.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you all about it.
All right.
And then... we have Rebecca Northway from The Peddler in San Francisco coming, and she has a really unique business in that she focuses on large-scale restaurant installations. Huh. So she's a florist. She does weddings, but she does a lot of weekly restaurant accounts. She does beautiful work at all of the best restaurants in San Francisco. So I was like, come, tell us how you do
it. And she's definitely somebody who wouldn't really... previously have engaged with ASCFG. Okay.
Exactly. So we have two of them. We have the girls from August Farm speaking about kind of incorporating flowers into their diverse farm plan. They spoke a bit today, too. We have Denise and Tony from Bear Mountain Farm talking about not only their venture into no-till, but just soil care in general. They have a lot of issues with Symphylins this winter, eating their ranunculus. So
with what?
Symphylins, which is a pest that not everyone has to deal with. Yeah, it's some heady stuff. So he's looking at the fungal content of his soil and trying to balance that with the bacterial component. And it's over my head, but I'm beginning to understand it.
So, no, but they're smart.
They're so smart
farmers.
So they're going to talk about smart things. We have Janet Foss coming to speak about kind of shoulder season extension, but hopefully some of the things Dave will be talking about tomorrow.
Janet's awesome.
Yeah.
And long time ASCFG member too.
One of the maybe not quite original, but very early.
She and I went to college together.
Really?
Yes. We were home ec majors together.
Oh wow.
That's awesome.
She was a senior when I was a freshman.
Oh cool. She's a cool kid. And then just a few more. We just have...
Aaron and Erin from Raindrop Farm
are going to come speak, which is fun. So they put on this weekend, and then now they're coming to speak for us. But they're just going to tell the story of their farm. And I know you featured them on the podcast before, but they've been growing flowers for like 19 years, which seems crazy because they're quite youthful.
Yeah.
And they're just going to talk about the evolution of their farm and how they started selling to the Seattle market this year.
I think
and
that's going to inspire people.
Yeah, it's great.
Are you speaking?
I'm not speaking. I'm kind of in the background
and
holding
it.
Dave, you're not speaking either, right?
I'm speaking.
Oh, you are speaking. What are you going to speak on? We just talked about that. Sorry.
No. Different.
Oh, yeah, different day.
ASCFG, what I'm doing.
Sorry,
about
I'm tired.
Hyacinths and fritillaria and callus.
Yeah. Cool bulbs.
Bulbs.
Yeah. Oh, you just said you had me at fritillaria.
I know.
Oh, my. Are you selling those too?
Yeah, we sell them, yeah.
Wow. Are you going to bring product with you?
I have a crate of hyacinths that are about to bloom.
Ooh, baby. All right, we'll talk tomorrow. That's great.
And we also have Poppy Davis coming to speak. She advises farmers on kind of their business plans, about planning for long-term wealth.
Oh, wow.
So we wanted to have someone come speak about the business side of flower farming. So she's amazing. We have nine speakers. It's a long day.
I'm so bummed that I'm tied up with the Northwest.
I
love the Northwest Flower and Garden Show, but that is pulling me away
from this.
Bad timing.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'll hear it all. And, then you have a half day of tours?
A half day of tours to Peter Court Roses and to Oregon
Flowers.
Yes.
The Metzgers.
Yes.
Right. Two amazing greenhouse growers. And how fun, because typically these ASCFG meetings happen when farms are dormant, and so you'll get to see pretty flowers.
Yes, in the greenhouses. Yes.
Amazing growers, both of them.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see them. Yeah.
Thank you both so much. Have I failed to ask something that you both, either one of you want to get across?
One other thing I did remember is that next year is our big conference, it'll be in Raleigh. We're also planning a meeting in the early winter, about this time next year in February or so. That's going to be for the seasoned growers with a not so much flower growing, but business part, business succession and that kind of stuff for the people who've been growing for 10 years or more.
Oh, that's
so.
Cool. And do you know where that will be?
Somewhere south where it's warm.
Okay, to be announced.
To be announced.
Okay, well, that's another reason to join ASCFG, so you can get on that kind of mailing list and find out about that. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
That's a new movement.
That was Lenny's idea.
I think it was my idea, but then, well, part of it was, but Jenny Love really took it in. Ramble.
Yeah, Jenny's
in
charge of it.
Well, it's taking, it's to me, that's an indication that it's a response to member needs.
Yes.
And having been a long time leader in the Garden Writers Association, I've gone through the same kind of cycles of issues with member demographics, and you have to be responsive. You have to listen to your members. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
That thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. That's sort of a promise for the South
February
in sunshine, somewhere warm.
Maybe
I
New Orleans, we'll see.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, you guys, this has been awesome. Dave asked me how long we were going to go. We went 39 minutes.
Okay.
All right?
That's
good.
That's fine with me.
I'm excited to share all of this with the podcast listeners, and I just love spending time with both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 162,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. If you value the content you receive each week, I invite you to show your thanks and support the Slow Flowers podcast with a donation. The button can be found on our homepage in the right column. Your contributions will help make it possible to transcribe future episodes of the podcast. Thank you to our lead sponsor for 2017, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit americangrownflowers.org. We're also grateful for support from Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them today at arcticalaskapeonies.com. And welcome to our newest sponsor, the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, a farmer-owned cooperative committed to providing the very best the Pacific Northwest has to offer in cut flowers, foliage, and plants. The Growers Market's mission is to foster a vibrant marketplace that sustains local flower farms and provides top quality products and services to the local floral industry. Find them at seattlewholesalegrowersmarket.com. Longfield Gardens has also returned as a 2017 sponsor, and we couldn't be happier to share their resources with you. Longfield Gardens provides home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. And finally, thank you, Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers. Formed in 1988, ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. I'm Deborah Prinzing, host and producer of the Slow Flowers podcast. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Brenlin. Learn more about his work at his new site,
KineticTreeFitness.com.